Chapter 7
"Chris," Dad said, and then suddenly he was looming over me as he does to grab me in a hug. "How you doing, kiddo?"
"Being crushed by you, Dad," I said, and he laughed. This was a standard call and response for us.
"Thanks for coming in to meet people," he said.
"We have to have a talk about that," I said, "sometime really soon."
I know," he said, but then waved Belle over anyway. Belle walked over, drink in hand, still smiling. "This is Lucas Hubbard, CEO and chairman of Accelerant Investments."
"Hello, Chris,"
Hubbard slash Belle said, extending his hand.
"It's nice to meet you."
I shook it.
"And you," I said. "I'm sorry, I'm having a bit of deja vu at the moment."
Hubbard Belle smiled.
"I get that a lot," he said.
He sipped from the glass, scotch on the rocks.
"Sorry," I said. I was just surprised. "So you know who Lucas is?" Dad said, watching our somewhat cryptic exchange.
"No, it's not that," I said. "I mean, yes, I know who Lucas Hubbard is, of course, but I also know..." I trailed off. It was considered rude to acknowledge that an integrated Hayden was using someone else's body.
"You know the integrator I'm using," Hubbard said, sparing me the faux pas.
"Yes, that's it," I said. "We've met before."
"Socially?"
Hubbard said.
"Professionally," I said. "Briefly."
"Interesting,"
Hubbard said. A rather good-looking woman walked up and stood next to him. He motioned to her.
"And this is Accelerant Investments General Counsel, Samuel Schwartz."
"We've met," Schwartz said, looking directly at me.
"Have you now?"
Hubbard said. "Also professionally," I said. "Also briefly."
"Indeed," Schwartz said, and smiled. "I didn't make the connection as to who you were at first when we met, Agent Shane. I had to look you up halfway through the conversation. I do apologize."
"No apology needed," I said. "I was out of context. Speaking of which, you are looking a bit different from when I last saw you, Mr. Schwartz. It's an unexpected look."
Schwartz glanced down at his body.
"I suppose it is," he said. "I know some Haydens who enjoy cross-gender integration, but I'm not usually one of them. But my usual integrator was unavailable this evening, and I was a last-minute addition to this party, so I had to work with who was available."
"You could have done worse," I assured him. He smiled again.
"I don't know how I feel about you knowing these two better than I do," Dad said, charmingly, smoothly.
"I find it a little surprising myself," I said.
"As do I," Hubbard said.
"It doesn't seem possible that your father and I haven't crossed paths before, all things considered. But then, aside from our various offices, Accelerant Investments doesn't do much in the field of real estate."
"Why is that, Lucas?" Dad asked.
"As a Hayden, I'm less engaged with the physical world, I suppose," Hubbard said. "It's just not front of mind for me."
He motioned at Dad with his scotch.
"I don't think you mind me not competing in your field."
"No," Dad said, "although I don't mind competition."
"That's because you're very good at beating the competition," Hubbard said.
Dad laughed. "I suppose that's true," he said.
"Of course it is," Hubbard said, then looked at me, smiling. "It's something the two of us have in common."
As we sat down at the table for dinner, I called Van, using my inside voice so no one at the table would know my attention was elsewhere. Van picked up.
"I'm busy," she said. I could barely hear her over the background noise.
"Where are you?" I asked.
"I'm in a bar, having a drink and trying to get laid," she said, "which means I'm busy."
"I know that Lucas Hubbard uses Nicholas Bell as an integrator."
"How do you know?"
"Because Hubbard is sitting across from me at the dinner table right now, using Bell."
"Well, shit," Van said. "That was easy."
"What should I do?"
"You're off the clock, Shane," Van said. "Do what you like."
"I thought you might be a little more excited," I said. "When you see me tomorrow on the job, I will be excited," Van promised. "Right now, I'm otherwise occupied."
"Got it," I said. "Sorry to bother you."
"So am I," Van said.
"But since you did, I'll tell you I've made progress on our corpse. The DNA came back."
"Who is he?"
"Don't know yet."
"I thought you said you made progress," I said.
"I did. The DNA analysis didn't come up with anything, but it determined that he's probably of Navajo ancestry.
which might explain why we can't find him in the database. If he's Navajo and lived on a reservation, then all his records would be on the reservation's databases. They're not automatically tied into the U.S. databases because the Navajo Nation is autonomous and strangely distrustful of the United States government. Van fairly cackled at that last line. How often does that happen, I asked. Even if you live on a reservation, if you ever leave it, you probably do something that gets you into our databases. Maybe this guy never left, Van said. Until he left. Do we have a request into them, I asked? The Navajo Nation, I mean. Our forensics team does, yeah, Van said. DNA fingerprints and facial scan? The Navajo will get to it when they get to it. They don't always put a priority on our needs. Up at the head of the table, Dad started clanging on his wine glass and then stood up. Have to go, I said. My dad is about to make a speech. Good, Van said. I was about to hang up on you anyway. And then she did. Dad's speech was his standard issue, at home with donors who everyone is pretending are friends speech, which is to say that it was light, familiar, casually intimate, yet at the same time it touched on themes important to the nation and to his not quite formally announced senatorial campaign. It went over like it usually does, which is to say very well, because Dad is Dad, and he's been doing the public relations thing since he was in high school. If you can't be charmed by Marcus Shane, you're probably a sociopath of some sort. But at the end of the speech, there was a switch-up from the text. Dad mentioned the challenges and opportunities that Abrams Kettering offers each of us, which I thought was a little out of context, since only I and Hubbard and Schwartz had Hayden's. So I cheated and did a quick facial scan of the other people at the table. Five of them were CEOs and or chairmen of companies that catered to the Hayden market one way or another, with all the businesses headquartered here in Virginia. That explained it then, and also why Dad was especially keen to have me at dinner, which meant, of course, that I was put on the spot. And what do you think of Abrams Kettering, Chris? One of the dinner guests asked me. The facial scan registered him as Rick Wisson, the husband of Jim Buchold, the CEO of Loudon Pharma. Buchold, who was seated next to his husband, shot him a look, which Wisson either missed or ignored. I did not imagine their ride home that night would be especially pleasant. I don't think it will be particularly surprising to you that my opinion closely matches my father's, I said, punting the conversational ball over to Dad, who naturally caught it easily. What Chris is saying is that, as with most topics relating to Hayden's, we talk a lot about it as a family, he said. So what I end up saying is a result of long discussions between the three of us. Now, I think everyone knows that I was publicly opposed to Abrams Kettering. I still think it was the wrong solution to something that wasn't a problem. We know, as a group, Hayden's are contributing more to the national economy than they take out of it. But Abrams Kettering did pass, for better or worse, and now it's time to see how we make this new environment work for us. That, I said, pointing down the table to my dad. What do you think about the walkout and the march? Wisson asked. Rick, Jim Buchold said as pleasantly as a snarl could be offered. It's not out of line for dinner, Wisson said to his husband. Not for this dinner, anyway. And Chris here is an actual Hayden. There's three of us at the table, actually, I said, nodding over to Hubbard and Schwartz. With all due respect to Lucas and Mr. Schwartz, they're not exactly going to be affected by the changes in the law, Wisson said. Hubbard and Schwartz both smiled thinly at this. You, on the other hand, have a job and are out there on the street. You have to have some thoughts on it. I think everyone has the right to their own opinion. And the right to peaceably assemble, I said. When in doubt, fall back on the First Amendment. I worry about the peaceable part of it, said Carol Lamb down the table. She was one of the people for whom the valet was hired. She was old and crankily conservative in the way only old liberals could be. My daughter tells me the D.C. police are calling in their entire force this weekend. They're worried about rioting. And why is that? Ms. Lamb? Sam Schwartz asked. She said they're worried that the Haydens who are marching won't be scared of the police, Lamb said.
Threeps aren't the same as human bodies. Your daughter is worried about a robot uprising, I said. Lamb looked over at me and immediately blushed. It's not that, she said hastily. It's just that this is the first mass Hayden protest. It's different than any other protest. Robot uprising, I said again, and then held up a hand before Lamb got even more flustered. Threeps aren't human bodies, no, but they're not Terminators either. The ones we use to get around on a daily basis are intentionally designed to be as much like the human body as possible in terms of strength, agility, and other factors. Because it's still a human running the Threep, Dad said. Right, I said, and a human is going to use a machine scaled to natural human capabilities better than one that's not. I held up my hand. This is a machine hand attached to a machine arm, but it's rated for human power. I'm not going to be able to flip this table in a rage. The marchers aren't going to be stomping down the mall tossing cars. Threeps are still tougher than human bodies, Wesson noted. They can take a lot of damage. Well, I said, I'll tell you a story. Mom and Dad will remember this one. When I was 8, I got a new bike for my birthday. Oh, God, this story, Mom said. And at the time, I had just found out about BMX stunts, I continued. So one morning I made a ramp out on our driveway and was jumping off the thing, working up the courage to do a spin or something. I finally psyched myself up, pedaled as fast as I could, zoomed up the ramp, tried a spin, and flew ass over handlebar off the bike and into the road, right into the path of a panel truck doing 30. It hit me. I really hate this story, Mom said. Dad grinned. And I disintegrated, I said. The impact tore my Threep apart. My head literally popped off and flew into the neighbor's bushes. I had no idea what happened. I had the feeling like I was shoved really hard and the world spun around, and then all of a sudden I was kicked back into my own body, wondering what the heck had just happened. If that had been your human body, you would have been dead, Dad pointed out. Yeah, I know, I said, which you or Mom mention every single time the story gets brought up. The point is, I turned back to Wisson, Threeps might be tougher than human bodies, but they can still get damaged. And Threeps aren't cheap. They cost the same as a car. Most people aren't going to want to let a cop whack on their Threep with a baton any more than they'd want a cop to use a baton on their fender. So I don't think we're going to have to worry about that robot uprising. The robots cost too much money for that.
What happened after the truck hit you? Schwartz asked.
Well, I was without a Threep for a while, I said, and there was laughter to that. And I think the driver of the moving truck threatened to sue Dad. He said I was at fault because I owned the Threep and the Threep came into his path and he had the right of way, Dad said. He wouldn't have had a case, I said. Personal transports are a special class of machine under the law. Short of manslaughter, hitting a Threep with a truck carries the same penalties as hitting a human body. Right, but I didn't want to have my name in the news over it, Dad said. So I bought him off, paid for the truck damage, and gave him floor tickets to the Wizards.
You've never given me floor tickets, Buchold said.
Don't get any ideas, Dad said, and everyone laughed again. Besides, Chris is an FBI agent these days. Now you'd get in trouble if you hit my kid with a truck. The other thing I remember is that the next Threep I got was a real lemon, I said, and turned to Dad. What model was it? A Metro Junior Courier, Dad said. A really janky model. Uh-oh, Hubbard said. Accelerant owns Metro. Well, then I said I blame you.
Fair enough, Hubbard said. Although this was 20 years ago, right?
About, I said. Then I didn't own it yet, Hubbard said. We bought it 18 years ago. No, 17.
17?
He turned to Schwartz, who looked surprised. Hubbard looked annoyed at his counsel, but then reached out to pat his hand reassuringly. 17, he said, finally. We bought it because the stock was depressed from a bad run of models, including the Courier and the Junior Courier. I can believe it, I said. It was the last Metro model we ever bought.
They've gotten better, Hubbard said. I can send you over one of our latest if you'd like a test drive.
Thanks, but I just got this. I motioned to my 660XS.
I'm not in the market. Hubbard smiled. It's funny, because we've begun discussions with Sebring Warner about a merger. I read that in the Post this morning, Dad said. That story was only about 60% inaccurate, Hubbard said. Aha, I said. Then I looked over at Schwartz.
What?
He said. That's why you're using an Ajax 370, I said. Market research. Schwartz looked at me blankly. Very perceptive, Hubbard said. Yes, Sam's been trying out some of the models, along with some other folks on my staff. There's something to be said for hands-on experience, as it were. Is this related to Abrams Kettering? Dad asked. The merger talks. Somewhat, Hubbard said. The government subsidy for threeps dries up at the end of the year. So right now, we're selling every threep we can put out there. But when January comes around, everything's going to contract. Merging's a hedge against that. But I'm also interested in their R&D program, which is doing some interesting things. He turned to me. They're doing some groundbreaking work in taste right now. As in aesthetics or in, like, tasting things, I asked. Actually tasting things, Hubbard said. It's been the one sense that's really never been well-developed in threeps because there's not a practical use for it. Threeps don't have to eat, but there's no reason why they couldn't. He pointed to my place setting, which was bare of food. Your being at the table right now would be more natural if you were eating and not just sitting there. To be fair, I am eating, I said, just in the other room. And through a tube, which I did not say because that might be a little dark for dinner conversation. And my seat cushion has an inductive charger, so my threep's eating too, so to speak. Even so, Hubbard said. Chris, one of the great goals that you and your family have tried to realize is the idea of making people see threeps as human. Despite your good work, there's still a ways to go with it. He motioned over to Carol Lamb, who seemed startled by the sudden attention. Our colleague's daughter has made that point for us just this evening. Being able to have a threep sit down to a meal and actually eat would continue that humanizing path. Maybe, I said. I have to tell you, I wonder where the food would go once I tasted it. There are better ways to humanize Haydens, Buchold said. Like giving them back their bodies. Hubbard turned his attention to Buchold. Ah, right, Jim Buchold, the one person at the table whose business isn't affected by Abrams Kettering. I don't think you can criticize Congress of keeping Hayden medical research levels at 100%, Buchold said. We're looking to solve the problem, not profit from it. That's noble of you, Hubbard said. Although I saw Loudon's last quarterly, you're profiting just fine. Buchold turned to me. Chris, let me ask you, he said. He pointed to my empty dinner plate. How would you rather taste your food? Through a threep or with your own tongue? Now it was Wisson's turn to shoot his husband a look, and rightly so. There was no way this discussion was not going to get awkward fast. But before I could answer, Buchold continued on. We've been working on research to unlock Hayden's sufferers, he said. Not just simulate eating, but to give Hayden's back the basic body integrity to do things like chew and swallow, to free their bodies and bring them back. Bring us back from what, exactly? Hubbard said. From a community of 5 million people in the U.S. and 40 million worldwide? From an emerging culture that interacts with but is independent of the physical world, with its own concerns, interests, and economy? You're aware that a large number of Haydens have no memory of the physical world at all, aren't you? Hubbard pointed at me. Chris here experienced lock-in at 2 years old. What do you remember from being two, Jim? I glanced over to Dad, but he was engaged in a side discussion with Carol Lamb and my mother. He was going to be no help here. You're missing the point, Buchold said. What we're trying to offer is options. The ability to break free of the physical constraints Haydens live with daily. Do I look constrained to you? Hubbard said. Does Chris? I'm right here, guys, I said. Then tell me, do you feel constrained? Hubbard asked me. Not really, I admitted. But then, as you said, I don't have much basis for comparison. I do, Hubbard said. I was 25 when I was locked in. The things I've done since then are things any person could do, that any person would want to do. You just have to borrow someone else's body to do them, Buchold said. Hubbard smiled, showing his teeth. I don't borrow someone else's body to pretend I don't have Haydens, Jim, he said.
I borrow someone else's body because otherwise there's a certain percentage of people who forget I'm a person.
All the more reason for a cure, Buchold said.
No, Hubbard said. Making people change because you can't deal with who they are isn't how it's supposed to be done. What needs to be done is for people to pull their heads out of their asses. You say cure, I hear you're not human enough.
Oh, come on, Buchold said. Don't get on that horse with me, Hubbard. No one's saying that, and you know it.
Do I? Hubbard said. Here's something to think about, Jim. Right now, neural networks and threeps and all the innovations that came out of the Hayden Research Initiative Act have been kept to the benefit of Haydens. So far, the FDA has only approved them for Haydens. But paraplegics and quadriplegics can benefit from threeps. So can other Americans with mobility issues. So can older Americans whose bodies are failing them in one way or another.
The FDA has kept threeps to Haydens victims because jamming a second brain into your head is inherently dangerous, Buchold said. You do it if you have no other choice.
But everyone else should still have that choice, Hubbard said. And now, finally, they're going to get access to these technologies, among every other thing it does. Abrams Kettering sets a pathway to getting these technologies out to more people. More Americans will be using these technologies in the future. Millions more. When they do, Jim, are you going to dismiss and belittle them, too?
I don't think you're hearing what I'm saying, Buchold said.
I'm hearing it just fine, Hubbard said. I want you to hear that what I hear sounds like bigotry.
Jesus, Buchold said. Now you sound like that goddamn Cassandra Bell woman.
Oh, man, I said.
What?
Buchold said, turning to me. I said.
Chris doesn't want to tell you that my integrator for the evening is Nicholas Bell, Cassandra Bell's older brother, Hubbard said. I, on the other hand, don't have a problem letting you know that.
Buchold stared at Hubbard silently for a moment, then...
You have got to be fucking Jim, Whisson said, interrupting.
Everything all right? Dad asked. His attention had finally returned to our end of the table.
Everything's fine, Dad, I said.
But I think Jim has a couple of questions that might be best asked to you directly. If Carol doesn't mind swapping seats with him for a bit, that would be lovely.
Of course not, Lamb said.
Excellent, I said, and looked over to Buchold, hoping he would take the hint, or at least be grateful to me for some FaceTime with Dad. He nodded curtly, stood up, and swapped seats. Hubbard leaned in.
Nice save, he said. Very quietly.
I nodded and then rubbed my jaw. The pain was coming back. I was pretty sure it wasn't because of my molar. My internal phone went up. I answered it with my inside voice. Yeah, I said.
Shane, Van said, how far are you from Leesburg right now?
About 10 miles, I said. Why?
You've heard of Loudon Pharma?
In fact, I'm having dinner with its CEO and his husband, I said. Why?
It just blew up, Van said.
What? I looked over at Buchold, who was speaking close in and animatedly with my dad. It just blew up, Van repeated, and it looks like a Hayden was involved.
You're joking.
I wish I was, because then I'd be getting laid instead of heading your direction, Van said. Get out there now. Start mapping the place and getting data. I'll be there in about 40 minutes.
What do I tell Jim Buchold? I asked.
He the CEO?
Yeah, I said. Then I noticed Buchold reaching into his suit pocket for his phone.
Hold on, I think he may be finding out.
Buchold leapt up and ran out of the room, phone still up to his ear.
Rick Whisson watched him leave, confused.
Yep, I said. He knows.